You're tuned into the Kojo Nam, the show on WEMU 88.5. Welcome. How our region's restaurants and bars are or are not staying afloat during the pandemic. We'll be talking with the podcast hosts about how we're grappling with socializing and sharing a meal all the while staying safe. Joining me now is Patrick Fort, co-host of Dish City. Patrick, welcome.
Hey, Kojo.
Also, Ruth Tam is the other co-host of Dish City. Ruth, welcome.
Hey, Kojo. Thanks for having us.
Yes, one of the problems with life these days is that I'm not seeing you and Patrick running around the studio all the time. It's making me extremely paranoid, but that's okay. Ruth, remind us again about Dish City. What was the idea when you launched last year?
You're not familiar with us, Dish City is WAMU's local food podcast. We explore city change through DC's iconic foods. The main idea is we use food to talk about the big issues that we face in this region, including this area's history, you know, population changes we've seen, migration, gentrification, big stuff like that.
Patrick, we're living in a very different moment. What was your thought process behind season two, and how did you pivot?
Well, you know, in our first season, we focused on specific foods. So each episode was about a kind of a singular cuisine or dish. But when the pandemic came to our region, we realized that, you know, we could probably be doing something better with our time, really. And like Ruth said, we were focused on learning and reporting about the ways that our region is changing. And there happens to be a lot of change happening right now. So we were kind of primed already to kind of put a hold on what we were working on and look at the ways our food scene was changing.
Yeah, when you say put a hold on what you were working on, just how much of what you originally planned for season two were you able to even keep?
I mean, we kept it all, but the bigger question is when it will see the light of day.
So you still have it, but you don't know when it's going to be on air in the podcast. 800-433-8850. How do you feel about going out to restaurants in the area? We'd like to hear from you. 800-433-8850. Ruth, your first episode this season was about the closing of a DC landmark, 18th Street Lounge. Can you tell us a little bit about it and why it was such an institution?
Yeah, this last most recent episode on 18th Street Lounge may be one of my new favorites. If you've never been, ESL is a nightclub. It was south of DuPont Circle for the past 25 years. Became really well known for live DJ sets and also live music performances in terms of, you know, house, jazz, reggae. In terms of the music scene, I think it was really well known for being a consistent place for both performers and people who were going there as music fans to see live shows. And it just like really carved out a space in the local music scene and offered something really consistent.
Well, I really liked that episode because I discovered that you had to go up 19 steps. Who knew that you had to go up 19 steps to get there? Here's a clip from Dish City's most recent episode about the 18th Street Lounge. Owner Fareed Nouri is talking about DC's food and music scene back when he first opened his establishment 25 years ago.
There wasn't much creativity in the hospitality world, restaurant-wise. You know, there was your average, you know, steakhouse, and then you have the cheap eats, ethnic foods, and then, you know, bar-wise, you either had college bars or, like, super expensive nightclubs, right?
Just a little taste of the most recent episode of Dish City. Ruth, the 18th Street Lounge filled a hole in the nightlife scene here in the 90s. What kind of a blow is it to lose it now?
I think it's a really big blow. I mean, there's no way to say goodbye when things shut down suddenly and when we can't go out and spend, you know, one last night at places that we know and love. It's also happening in the middle of all this other major loss, whether that's like, you know, on a human level, like we are losing people to this pandemic and we're also losing so many other businesses. So this is just one of the many things that complicates the mourning process for us. And I was talking to a friend about this, but, you know, we're not really just mourning the loss of these individual businesses, but we're kind of I think, saying goodbye to the person that we were when we used to go to them. And so these chapters in our lives are closing. And it's not because of anything that we had decided for ourselves, not any of these usual transition points like, oh, we're moving out of town, or, you know, we're getting older, so we're not going out as much anymore. These chapters of our lives are really closing because of the pandemic. And then we also have like no say in that process.
Ruth, Eric Hilton was one of the original owners of 18th Street Lounge before a change in ownership. He and his brother Ian, who have been major players in DC's nightlife scene with bars all around the U Street corridor, just announced that they're closing seven other bars, including El Rey, the Brixton, and American Ice Company, among others. What does this mean for nightlife here in general and the U Street area in particular?
I think a lot of these bars signified, when they first opened, this era of DC nightlife where U Street was the cool place to be. And, you know, Marvin opened up in 2007. This was shortly after Eric Hilton left as an owner at 18th Street Lounge. And just personally speaking, it was the first bar that I went to in DC. And it was a lot like ESL in a way. With the live music and all these different rooms to explore. And Marvin closing and all these other bars closing means that this chapter of nightlife has closed and that U Street after the pandemic may not look the same at all. And then, of course, in the short term, there's all these jobs that are being lost now, which is what Laura Hayes, the Washington City paper reporter who first broke this news, has really done a great job of drawing attention to.
And then Twins, my favorite jazz club on U Street, also closed. Is there any indication, Ruth, that the bars may reopen down the line?
I think a lot of people who have, you know, deep ties in local business and who have made a name for themselves in creating this kind of nightlife, they want to be a part of DC's culture. And just because the pandemic has put a stop on that now doesn't mean that all their hopes and dreams have just died with it. I think people do want to come back. I know that Fareed Noori, the owner of 18th Street Lounge, is planning on reopening, you know, another form of 18th Street Lounge. I don't know if it will be like ESL 2.0 or something totally different, but he is making plans to like be involved in DC's nightlife again. And I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, he wasn't alone there.
Patrick, tell us a little bit more about upcoming shows. What's in store for listeners?
Well, I don't want to spoil everything, but we're kind of working on an episode on the Mid-Autumn Festival and Mooncakes. And we're also working on a restaurant, an episode kind of about the a future hypothetical restaurant, is what I'll say about that. And we've got a few other ideas bouncing around in our brains, but keep your eyes on your podcast feed.
A future hypothetical restaurant sounds intriguing. Here's Liz in Fairfax, Virginia. Liz, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hi, thanks for having me on. We went out to pick up curbside, and we're very disappointed in what happened. And then later on, when things first opened up, we wanted to be supportive, and we went out. And it was anything but a pleasant dining experience. They asked us, do you want paper or linen? Do you want plastic or regular? There's no ketchup or Tabasco sauce or salt and pepper on the table. We had to ask for that, and that was brought in packets. So if they bring you too many packets, they get thrown away. If they don't bring you enough packets, you got to ask for more. When we did curbside pickup, our orders were always messed up, and we really enjoy some ethnic food, and we found that a lot of the ethnic restaurants have not opened up yet. They're still waiting for, I guess, the 100%.
Let me ask you, Liz, you found curbside pickup and dining disappointing at a variety of places or just one place?
We tried three different places, which were our three favorite places. And Kojo, that's probably why it was so disappointing, because they were our favorites and we wanted to support the staff there, the wait staff, the cooks, the chefs. And the places that we've gone back to, like the servers that we knew for several years, they're gone. The cooks and chefs that we knew, they're gone. So I think there's been...
So neither, you know, neither curbside or restaurant dining worked for you. Ruth, we only have about a minute left in this segment, but have you been hearing a lot of that?
Yeah, there are some people who have found that the dining experience during the pandemic is different than the dining experience before the pandemic. And that's something that I think everyone should be aware of when they decide to patronize a restaurant. You know, supply chains are different. Business models are different. People who used to work at these restaurants don't necessarily feel comfortable going back. So people have had to kind of make things up on the fly. And we should all be very understanding and approach this situation with compassion.
Well, we'll be talking a little bit more about that after a short break, but you're welcome to join the conversation. Are you eating outdoors? Are you willing to eat inside a restaurant? Let us know, 800-433-8850. Send us a tweet at Kojo Show. Email to kojo@wamu.org. I'm Kojo Namdi.
Hi, it's Diane. The next meeting of my book club is on Wednesday, May 31st at 1 p.m. Eastern. I'll host a discussion of Mad Honey by Jodi Picou and Jennifer Finney Boylan, followed by a conversation with the authors. Find out more and register at dianereem.org/book club.
Welcome back to our conversation about how people in this region are feeling about dining out or carry out. Are you eating outdoors? Are you willing to eat inside a restaurant? Have you been eating out? We're talking with Ruth Tam and Patrick Fort. They are the co-hosts of the WMU podcast Dish City. You both joined us this spring to talk about cooking at home during quarantine. But months into the pandemic, as we begin settling into this new normal, I'll start with you, Patrick. How have you both been approaching eating out?
I for one, haven't been approaching it. That's kind of a subject that we get into in our next episode.
Why have you not been eating out?
Well, I mean, I think there's a bunch of reasons. I think, the big one obviously is that I don't feel comfortable doing it. And I think there's obviously, I think, like, we want things to be normal, right? And I totally understand kind of that desire, and I certainly feel the pull myself to want to eat out and to want to kind of see friends in social environments again. But I think there's a whole like list of other things that I think, you know, are more important than that right now. And especially like wanting normalcy, like if you try to go to a situation that feels where you're seeking normal in an abnormal time, like you're going to be disappointed.
Is there data that helps you to maintain your position, Patrick?
Yeah, I mean, some of the reporting that's been coming out links, positive cases of COVID-19 to dining out. There's data there.
How about you, Ruth?
I have gone out to eat twice during this pandemic. The first time was at a fast casual place where I could pretty much limit my. I didn't have to deal with any wait staff. I placed my order, I picked up my food, and then ate at a socially distanced table. And then I also ate out once at a food hall out in Annandale, where it was a similar situation. Placed an order, was able to pick it up really quickly, and then eat at a socially distanced table. And these were decisions that I made kind of like I approached it as like a one-time thing. I thought about who I was eating with, where I was eating, who was going to be there, and I made my decision like that. And then, you know, I'm trying to approach every other instance where that comes up with the same kind of like, do I trust this situation? Do I trust this restaurant? And try to take it one thing, one situation at a time.
Well, our first caller, Liz, said she hadn't had pleasant experiences either with going to restaurants or with picking up. So let's hear from a few other people. Here is Kieran in Alexandria. Kieran, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Kojo. Love your show. Wanted to call in because my husband and I wanted to support local throughout this pandemic. We had great experiences during lockdown with doing curbside pickup, everything from casual dining like Pizza Hut all the way through to some of the more upscale restaurants that we like to frequent. And as of late, we have probably been going out to eat maybe once every week or once every other week, and really a myriad of establishments. We've gone to Michelin restaurants, we've gone to fast casual. And I have to say, I think that if you adjust your expectations, you won't be disappointed. So yes, of course, it's not going to be constant tableside service, but the quality of food is still there. People are still showing up and they're, you know, braving it to put out a wonderful meal for you and your family. And so my husband and I have really appreciated that and tried to give back. There have been a couple of restaurants that have been so impressive because you can pay online with online systems like Talk.com. And so it's completely paperless. You're not touching the servers at all. You're leaving your plates in a sort of trough that they've set at the side. They're taking it away. They're constantly far away, and they're completely covered every time they come near you. So we felt really safe.
Thank you very much for sharing that with us, Kieran. Let's go to Jane in Alexandria, Virginia. Jane, your turn.
Hello. I have experiences very similar to Kieran and very opposite of Liz, who called earlier. And I've pretty much every place I've gone has been here in Alexandria. And I've had excellent experiences. Many of the former staff are still there, and it was great to see them again. And I started to call several days ago when you did the segment on music. La Porta's on Duke Street in Alexandria has live music again, and every night of the week, and I've been there, and I feel totally safe. They're following all the guidelines and doing everything that, and then putting signs what they expect of the customers to do as well, as far as wearing masks and so forth. And they've done, several other places have done a nice job of either clearing out tables or marking tables that are not for sitting at, so that they can still have some ambiance, but not, but still follow the distance procedures. So I've been very happy. I go pretty much every Tuesday at lunch with some friends of mine, and we've been very happy with everything.
Okay, thank you very much for your call, and for it turns out that both of those last two calls were from people in Alexandria, so Alexandria might have something special going on. Let's talk now with Lauren R. Taylor, Director of Safe Bars and Defend Yourself. Lauren R. Taylor, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Lauren, the possibility is that the opposite of Ruth and Patrick are restaurant goers who may be too comfortable eating out. And as the pandemic wears on, some customers are getting lax with safety precautions, and it falls to those working in restaurants to enforce the rules. To address customers who are not following guidelines, sister organizations Safe Bars and Defend Yourself teamed up to lead de-escalation trainings. And Lauren R. Taylor directs both of those organizations. Lauren, how have the challenges bartenders and waiters face at work changed over the past 6 months?
Absolutely. Well, one thing we know is that people who work in hospitality already have a lot of customer service skills, a lot of de-escalation skills, a lot of skills for making sure that people are comfortable and welcome and having a good time and happy with their food and drink. But now what's happening is that, you know, pretty much everybody in the country is experiencing additional stress and probably fear. And a lot of times that turns into anger. And they're taking it out on people in service positions, essential workers, people who work in hospitality. And so it's showing up, and anybody who follows the news has seen these things. It's showing up at people walking in angry, hostile, wanting to come in and have the rules bent for them or broken for them, whether it's not wearing a mask or whether it's pushing tables together when, you know, at least in DC, it's maximum six people at a table, those kinds of things. And, you know, hospitality workers have a lot of skills and have very hard jobs. And now to ask them also to enforce this kind of safety, and to deal with people who are hostile and threatening, I don't have any fancy way to say it. It's just not right.
what are the biggest reasons for confrontations between customers and restaurant workers?
Masks.
Oh, one word, huh?
One word, masks.
Masks.
Yes.
Well, yes. Do customers know the rules, Lauren, in most cases? Because it gets a little fuzzy, doesn't it? You do have to take your mask off to eat. What makes someone a good customer in this scenario?
So a good customer walks in with a mask, sits where the designated seating areas are, which in DC is, you know, usually kind of, depending on how the restaurant or bar was set up pre-pandemic, is usually something like every other table. So sits where the designated seating is, and keeps their mask on except when they're eating. Now, a lot of places, I think that the rules technically allow you to have your mask off when you're at your table. But it would be better if when you're talking to the server, you also have a mask on.
If you want to like order something extra or order a drink and you want the server to come back over while you're eating,
right,
it's best to put the mask back on when you're talking to the server.
Right, right. Okay. I mean, but that's not required. What's required is that when you're, you know, when you're not at your table, for example, a lot of people are pushing back on putting their mask back on when they go to the bathroom.
Oh, okay. People don't feel the need to do that.
Right.
And it's
and I've even heard people say things like, well, why do I have to do that? There's nobody else in here. And it's like, excuse me, the people who work here are human beings and they can catch the virus too.
Exactly right. You're wearing the mask to protect other people, not to protect yourself who have to come in there, who have to go in there at some point. Let me go now to Chelsea in Rockville. Chelsea, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Kojo. Great to be on the show. I wanted to say that I haven't eaten out recently, but I have been doing a lot of takeout, especially because I'm living with family. I've been really careful about being in spaces where, you know, I might be exposed and then expose other people in my family who might be vulnerable. I really commend, like, the work of restaurant workers who are serving during this time because I've served as a server in the past before. But I know a lot of my apprehension comes from the fact that there have definitely been restaurants I've seen where there's lots of people outside or people don't seem to be that far apart. But I've also seen restaurants that do really give a lot of adequate space and require that people space out. I guess one thing, I guess, about eating out is that I eat out a lot before the pandemic. So I've actually been able to save a lot of money comparison to when I would because I'm a student right now. And I think it's really interesting. I hope the conversation that also comes out of this is thinking about how, you know, servers can be able to be paid adequately for their time, because really relying on tips, I can imagine, is like a really hard thing to do if there's not as many tables that there are available to wait on.
Thank you for your call. We got a tweet from Brian who says, I'm a hospitality worker and I'm disappointed in the hostility shown to me and my coworkers. Folks seem to be over the pandemic and are upset when reminded that things are not normal. Please don't forget that hospitality workers endanger their lives to enable your leisure. Going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll continue the conversation with Patrick Forth, Ruth Tam, and Lauren R. Taylor, taking your calls at 800-433-8850. What are strategies are you using to keep safe while dining out? Give us a call, 800-433-8850. I'm Kojo Nandi. Welcome back. We're talking about how people who are in this region are feeling about dining out. We're talking with Lauren R. Taylor, Director of Safe Bars and Defend Yourself, and Patrick Forth and Ruth Tam, who are the co-hosts of Dish City, taking your calls at 800-433-8850. Ruth and Patrick, I'll start with you, Ruth. Since you guys host a local food podcast, do you feel pressure to get back out there and check out the food scene?
I think a little bit. I think when I was preparing for coming on the show, I was like, oh, you know, I've only been out to eat twice during this whole time. Like, I gotta, like, you know, touch back and keep in touch with my sources and figure out what things have been like. I think this is a part of what people expect from dining out, but also this is a time where people's personal sense of safety and comfort, like that has all kind of been being thrown into question right now. And trying to not hold myself to standards that, you know, don't take into account my personal desire for safety too.
Patrick, have you been feeling the pressure?
I mean, I think I'd agree with everything that Ruth said. I think, you know, luckily we are, I think, being very thoughtful about, you know, what we consider risks and what we're like willing to do. And I think that there's certainly, you want to be out there, you know, for your profession, but also on a personal level, there's a pull on both ends.
Ruth, for the most part, restaurants in our region can serve outdoors or if indoors at 50% capacity. From your conversations with those in the restaurant industry, what are you seeing in terms of how the process of allowing diners back to restaurants has played out?
In terms of the 50% capacity thing, I think when I first started to consider going out to eat again, I assumed that there would be like, I don't know what I thought, but I thought maybe there'd be like a bouncer at every door, kind of like checking to see like how many people are coming in, coming out. But I think it's obvious that restaurants, you know, they're not able to staff the people that they were before, much less like bouncers just counting people at the door. So what people have done is they remove, you know, 50% of their seating indoors. And if they're even able to, if it makes sense to be open during this time, they've limited the seating, they've limited the amount of time that people have to approach servers and restaurant workers. Every restaurant has their own rules and policies, and typically all that stuff is available on each establishment's website.
Rock tweets, there's no way that restaurant staff should be engaged with customers that don't want to wear masks. Walk away, get a manager or owner, absolutely no reason and no compensation that can justify an employee having to deal with that. Owners, handle your business. Ruth, as you've been talking to people for this city, what have you been hearing about these issues?
From what I've seen from restaurant workers who are posting online, I think there's worries that like they see two extremes. Like they see diners who are super considerate and very, very cautious and trying to be very careful about going out. And then they see people who are very obviously flouting the rules. And I think during these times, like anytime we see something that differentiates from whatever we consider the norm, it sticks out to us. And so if you see someone doing something different than what you think is normal, it's going to be really clear in your mind. And so they go on social media and they share all these stories of people breaking the rules. And, you know, there might be some people who, when you tell them, hey, can you put your mask back on? Or would you mind if you remind them of your certain rules and policies, people will accommodate them. And then there are others who will like double down and get really upset about it. So it is kind of what we've heard from Lauren. You know, that's what I've been hearing from restaurant workers.
Indeed, Lauren R. Taylor, can you tell us more about confrontations caused by time limits on tables and earlier closing times?
That's exactly what I was thinking about when Ruth was talking, is that another pain point is the earlier closing times. And it's causing two problems. One is that customers, patrons are resisting it. Again, I totally embrace what Ruth is saying, that it's not everybody. Plenty of people are being very respectful, but it's the few people who are, you know, who are putting everybody at risk and causing a lot of extra stress for people who work in bars and restaurants. So they're pushing back on the closing time. And the other problem that's related to that is that they're drinking more faster, because they don't have as much time to do it in. You know, as always, bartenders and servers have to monitor to make sure that they're not over-serving. But patrons are more likely to give them a hard time about it.
What about customers who fear that their waiter is not following safety protocols? What should they say or do?
Absolutely. And, you know, all of us, My plea for everybody is to be empathetic and compassionate and realize that everybody in the world is having a hard time now. And so if you see a server who is not wearing their mask properly or doing something else that you feel puts you at risk, very simply just say, you know, can you pull your mask up or can you step back a little bit? And if you don't get what you need, ask for the manager, as always. You know, it's always better to bring, and I bow to Tom Sietsma here, it's always better to bring up the problem right then when it can be addressed rather than going on Yelp or whatever and complaining later.
Patrick, do you see your anxiety stemming from the behavior both of customers and restaurant workers?
You know, I think for me, with my limited to no experience dining out at restaurants, I think the thing that I struggle with is the expectations of other customers. I think, you know, there's at least rules that I can go up and see what restaurants are supposed to be doing and what guidelines have been established, even though they're new and everybody's working their hardest to kind of get up to date and up to spec on those. I think that's a thing you can control and you can kind of vet yourself. But I think the challenging thing for me is I don't know what, you know, the tables around me are doing. I don't know what those people are doing, you know, and I think to a point we've talked about earlier is the amount of mask wearing that is happening doesn't necessarily line up with how much should be happening in terms of diners.
Well, a number of people have been waiting on the phone for a while to join this conversation. So I'll start with Obi in Washington, D.C. Obi, your turn.
Hey, Kojo. Love your show, by the way. I'm a creative director. I serve a lot of hospitality clients in the city. And one thing that's striking me right now is I'm hearing the word support a lot from people who are disappointed with their experiences. And I just want to point out that you don't support something when it's at its best. You support it because you've experienced it at its best. So I think we just need to sort of like, some people have echoed this, we need to adjust our expectations, because I've been a career server and bartender. And I remember being a bartender, the running joke is like, you're everyone's therapist. And when you're a server, on a bad day, you're a punching bag. On a good day, you're a security blanket. And so this is an industry that we've gotten used to supporting us at our best and our worst. And I think as a community as a whole, we need to realize this is our time to show up for them and support them, which means adjusting our expectations.
Okay. Thank you very much for your call. Care to comment on that, Lauren?
I couldn't have said it better. I really appreciate the call.
It's
something everybody needs to hear. Indeed. And I will just add one thing. Tip well.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing that, Obi. And yes, tip well. Here's Brian in Alexandria, Virginia. Brian, go ahead, please.
Well, we went out to dinner on Monday for the first time since all this started, with the exception of like drive-through, takeout, fast food type stuff. So went to a favorite restaurant of ours, the Carlisle in Shirlington, Virginia. We had gotten their curbside service a few months ago and done that, but this was the first time that they were open and they were available. We sat outside, which they always had a nice outside seating anyways, and it was a beautiful night Monday, if anybody remembers, so I would have sat outside anyways, even if it hadn't been for this. When we got there, we saw that they had definitely made some changes to the sidewalk now by the restaurant. They've actually taken over the curb lane of the road there and made a little barrier, so now the sidewalk traffic goes around them, so they got to have the entire sidewalk. Wow. For their seating, all the tables were spaced out, you know, the way they were. We had a very positive experience. We got a nice little table there. Of course, we had our masks on. The server had her masks. I'm glad you mentioned before sort of the still getting used to this. Obviously, you can't eat with a mask on. And for a while, we tried the little thing where it was dangling off our ear, and I didn't know whether we should eat and put the mask back on and then eat or just keep it off for the duration. we did one time, we didn't have our masks on when the server came up and talked to us, and I answered a question, and then my wife said, oh, wait, maybe we should have them on. So when she came over, we'd quickly put the mask back on when the server was there. So we're still getting used to the protocol there. The one thing that they used to have at that restaurant, really nice bread. They weren't serving bread anymore, but directly next to the restaurant is their own little bread.
Thank you for sharing that. But I got to interrupt you because we're running out of time. And Lauren, I only have about 30 seconds for you to tell us more about the de-escalation trainings that you're conducting for restaurant workers.
Absolutely. Thanks for asking. So we're offering them at a sliding scale fee. Nobody turned away for inability to pay online. And you can find them at defendyourself.org or safebars.org. And then we're also offering them to establishments that might want to hire us to train their staff. We've had a lot of success, and people say it helps them be more confident in keeping themselves and their patrons safe.
Lauren Art Taylor is director of Safe Bars and Defend Yourself. Ruth Tam and Patrick Fort are the co-hosts of This City. Thank you all for joining us. Today's show on Dining Out in the DMV was produced by Ines Rinneke. On an upcoming Kojo show, we're remembering lives lost to COVID-19. Has someone close to you passed away from the coronavirus? Share your story with us. Go to kojoshow.org and click on the banner that says Remembering the Lives Lost. Coming up Friday on the Politics Hour, Montgomery County Executive Mark Elrich joins us to talk about the Purple Line debacle and Maryland Governor Larry Hogan's highway widening project. Plus, we'll hear about the latest coronavirus numbers, and we'll talk about the effect the pandemic is having on the county budget. That all starts tomorrow at noon, of course, with our resident analyst Tom Sherwood on hand. Until then, thank you all for listening and stay safe. I'm Kojo Namdi.
The Kojo Namdi Show is produced by Julie Devenbrock, Sydney Granin, Kurt Gardner, Lauren Marco, Richard Cunningham, and Ines Rinneke. Our managing producer is Ingalisa Schroepsdorf. Our engineer is Mike Kidd. For past shows and more content, visit kojoshow.org.
WAMU 88.5 is your listener-supported NPR news station in the greater Washington, D.C. region. You can support the Kojo Namdi Show and all the regional coverage you value by becoming a member today. Click the donate button at WAMU.org, and thanks.